we've been thinking a lot lately about borders. President Trump wants to fortify one.
I said right from the beginning, we're going to build a wall. It's going to be a real wall. See that ceiling up there? I mean, this is a wall that if you get up there, you're not coming down very easy.
President Reagan wanted to erase one.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Wars are fought over borders. People risk the unknown trying to cross them because, as these migrants from Cameroon explain, what's known back home is worse.
They want to kill us over there.
But borders are fortified to keep out the unknown.
This is Canada, right?
I'm telling you right now, if you're crossing here, you'll be arrested, okay?
Borders are lines on maps, but they also exist in our imagination. There are books about borders, films like the classic El Norte.
Inspired by a dream.
Al Norte.
El Norte.
They traveled thousands of miles to get to a new land.
And borders are destinations, a notch on your passport. But what if all borders were open? There are three types of borders: controlled, like ours with Mexico, closed, North and South Korea, and open, the entire Nordic region, and at one time, most of the world. Many scholars point to the early 1900s and post-World War I as the beginning of controlled borders. And those who want to go back to open borders say it's a human rights issue. Bioethicist Jacob M. Appel argues that treating human beings differently simply because they were born behind a different border is unethical. And open border backers also say free migration can reduce world poverty, by some estimates, producing $78 trillion in gains. All this week, we'll be looking at borders. Today, what is the economic benefit of immigration? Michael Clemens is an economist with the Center for Global Development. While not an open border advocate, he agrees loosening borders would double world GDP. Michael, you know that's counterintuitive because many against open borders say too many immigrants tear down an economy. So explain.
Borders are really interesting places. One of the most remarkable things about the world in economic terms is that what you earn depends mostly on where you are. The exact same person doing the exact same task in Haiti coming to the U.S. doing the same work, same exact task in that job can earn 6 or 7 times more in real economic terms just for doing the same thing. You know, they say that it's in the U.S. we say that for success in life, it's not mostly what you know, but who you know. In the world more broadly, it's not what you know or who you know as much as where you are. Mm. And the thing is that when a Haitian earns money in the United States, that's not charity. Wages aren't charity. You get paid wages because you're adding at least that much value to an employer and to the economy more broadly. So what that wage difference reflects is that those workers are enormously more productive in one place than the other. The flip side of that is when you block that person at the border, you take that potential economic contribution away. It doesn't just impoverish the migrant, it takes away the economic contribution that they could make to the world, which is the reason they're earning more money.
Yeah. Well, you and your co-researcher, Lance Pritchett, collaborated on this, and you found that a large percentage of people from Haiti, Mexico, India, who live above the international poverty lines, don't live in their home countries. So they're living, you know, in the United States or other countries. So the money that they're making that's reducing poverty, maybe they're sending it home, but it's certainly reducing their own poverty, may be at least as important as any economic change that actually happens within Haiti.
Absolutely. The vast majority of people who ever emerged from poverty who were born in Haiti did it by leaving Haiti. And that's nothing new. A lot of people, for example, in the United States have historical origins in Sweden. Sweden used to be a pretty poor country. And that's the reason why between 1860 and 1930, almost 20% of Sweden left permanently. They emerged from poverty by moving, and that's something that's in the family experience of a lot of Americans.
Well, and the analysis continues. They moved, but a lot of the money seemed to have been sent home, or at least something happened that put Sweden back on its feet, and you don't think of Swedes as migrants anymore.
migration was part and parcel of Sweden's economic development, and that's certainly true for Haiti today. Haiti got a lot of aid after the catastrophic earthquake of 2010, but they get much more in money from relatives abroad than they get in foreign aid. It's a very important part of economic development at home.
But how does this, okay, so this helped Sweden, will help, is helping Haiti. How does it help Americans?
Well, the thing about those global economic gains from people going to places where they are more productive is that the huge majority of that happens in the country where they go. But when Haitians come and multiply their economic productivity by 6 or 7 times just by working here, that's an addition they're making to the U.S. economy. So the lion's share of the overall economic benefit accrues to the country where they go.
Well, to explain that further, because the thinking is that wealthy nations, when they open their doors, citizens who already live there lose their jobs or see their wages go down because the workers who are coming in as migrants work for so much less and take jobs.
So this is something we have a very long experience with in the United States. For example, between 1882 and 1965, with immaterial exceptions, the U.S. banned all Chinese immigration. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear why they did that. They were afraid of Chinese people taking American jobs, somehow degrading American culture, and there were public health concerns, too. In 1965, that policy was completely reversed, and you can see that none of those predictions came true. So it's hypothetically possible for that to happen, but it's not like the U.S. doesn't have experience with claims of that kind and things working out very differently.
What about the claim that immigrants hurt the economy because they have more need for benefits and resources because they come and are so impoverished? They overwhelm schools with children who can't speak English. They drain the system and thereby hurt American taxpayers.
The vast majority of immigrants certainly do not come to the United States for public benefits. Immigration from Mexico collapsed right after 2006, coinciding exactly with the collapse of housing starts in the U.S. because so many of them were working in construction. Nothing changed about welfare benefits right after 2006. What changed was jobs, and people more or less stopped coming. So that's a really strong indicator that people are coming to contribute to the economy. They're coming to work hard. They're mostly not coming for benefits. And there's a blue ribbon panel that was put together by the National Academy of Sciences of some of the best labor economists who study immigration across the political spectrum. A couple of years ago, they did a comprehensive assessment of the fiscal effects of migrants. Do they put it more money into public coffers than they take out? And the consensus of all of those economists was that after a generation, that is including the children of new migrants, that fiscal effect is positive. Mm. So yes, there are some startup costs, but very soon children of immigrants and their children just look a lot like Americans, and Americans aren't costly to America. Americans are part of America, and they benefit America. In a much broader sense, immigration is an investment. It's not a handout. It's not just a cost. Like any investment, it can have upfront costs, but like any good investment, the long-term benefits enormously exceed those costs.
That's Michael Clemens, an economist at the Center for Global Development and a proponent of loosening border restrictions. Michael Clemens, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Of course, not everyone agrees with looser borders. Here's Senator Bernie Sanders in 2015.
What they are talking about is completely opening up the border. That was the question. Should we have a completely open border so that anybody can come into the United States of America? If that were to happen, which I strongly disagree with, there is no question in my mind that that would substantially lower wages in this country.
And others say the issue isn't the economy, it's security. But while there are borders that keep people out, there are borders that keep people in. That's the Bulgarian Women's Choir. Their recordings in the 70s made them cult favorites, but they couldn't cross their border to perform until the Iron Curtain fell. Their story tomorrow, here and now.